Welcome to Deep Dive into Water Safety. It's a show that we started because of the 2025 Hawaii Water Safety Plan that showed some startling statistics that we have the second highest drowning rate in the country, and our kids are drowning at a very high rate. And our second graders have a very minimal amount of education around water safety. And Native Hawaiians are drowning at a almost a triple rate compared to most other populations in our state. So we started the show, and we started on a local level. We've gone to a national level, and we've been talking to international experts like our guests that we have today. What we've realized is that we all work in this together because water safety and drowning, which is preventable, is not just a local issue or a national issue. It's an international issue. So we've identified people in different countries and in different areas to talk to us. So our next guest is Bruce Hopkins, who is head of the lifeguards at Bondi Beach, and he's president of the Surf Education International, and a global face of water safety through the TV series Bondi Rescue. He's had over 3 decades of service, and he's performed thousands of rescues and helped shape drowning prevention education in Australia and worldwide. We're really excited to have him come on. It is morning in Australia, and we have him on a Zoom call. So, aloha, Bruce. Welcome to our show.
Aloha to you too, and yeah, thanks for having me. It's really good.
Okay, well, let's start off because there's a lot of good information that I'd like our listeners to get. So let's just start with some personal background. Tell us about what drew you to lifeguarding, because you have a long career, and how it has kept you motivated all these years and committed. And what does a day in the life of a lifeguard in a busy season look like? And how has the role of professional lifeguarding evolved in your time, from rescue practices to public education? So that's a lot in the first, but I think you can handle that.
Oh, look, the lifeguard, how it came about, I left school and I was working at a radio station for about 4 years. And I was doing a lot of ocean racing in Australia, which is like an Ironman series, but the ocean, not triathlon, it's the ocean Ironman series. And I just needed something where I could sort of work and then also have enough time to train and go and compete. And I was talking to one of the guys that was already a lifeguard down at the beach and said, "Oh, you should try out for being a lifeguard. And then, you can do some, you do your training, all fits in with your lifestyle, go and race and things." So that's how that came about. I applied, got on, and then was only ever going to do it for 5 years, pretty much. And then, anyway, I just kept going. That was early 90s, about 92, I think I started. And, it changed when, I suppose, then the longevity of it is your next question. That's how I got into it. The longevity would be, as I said, 5 years, and then you became a senior lifeguard. And I thought I'll just do that and get that title, and then move on. Maybe go back to radio. I'll go back to wherever. Whatever I'm going to do from there. The 2000 Olympics came along in Sydney, and they had the beach volleyball. And they built the stadium on Bondi Beach. Now, the lead up to that was probably a couple of years of working out, logistics and how they're going to build the stadium and put it in. And I sort of was not in a senior role or a head lifeguard role at the time. But it was weird that about a year out from the Olympics, we lost all the experienced lifeguards. They all sort of tended to leave. And in those days, it was only a seasonal job. It wasn't a full-time job. It was only like a September through to sort of April, May. And I could just see with the Olympics coming, we had to split the beach in half because the stadium went down at high tide, was hitting the back of the stadium, so you couldn't get through to each side of the beach. So we had to work out a strategy, and no one was sort of working out what to do and how we're going to do it. And I just come up with a plan that we just set up a lifeguard station sort of tower, makeup tower down the north end, and then the south end we'd have another station. So basically treated as two separate beaches. So from there, that I just have some I had some ideas and put them forward, and other senior guys left, and next thing you know, I just ended up falling to the roller's head lifeguard without even really expecting it. I just ended up just being there just by coming up with a different, some ideas. And then I thought, well, now I've got the opportunity to probably change the way we lifeguard, the way the service progresses, and a way of not losing all our senior lifeguards. Because by the time they got to their 30s and having families, and they needed a full-time job. So the goal was to have full-time lifeguards, and that eventuated. I mean, Bondi went full-time earlier actually than that. It was 95, 96. And then Bronte and Tamarama, which we look after, also ended up going full-time into the late 2000s. And all due probably to the Olympics. It was a great time down there during the Olympics, and I probably have to thank the Olympics to be there at that time, because it probably opened up doors for me to keep doing what I'm doing now. So that was basically what kept me in the job. And then I could see we could change the way our patrolling strategies are, the way we can minimize the risk for lifeguards rescuing people, and also minimize the risk of people coming down and enjoying themselves at the beach. So then we changed the culture a little bit, and that changed. And then I suppose that everything just kept falling into place. And the longevity was like every time I thought about moving on and doing something else, the next thing you know, Bondi Rescue came along in 2005. And I remember Ben Davies coming to me, and he worked a casual summer the year before, and he was like a producer in TV. But there wasn't much work in summer, so he worked the previous summer, and he came to me after this at that and said, "Oh, I think there could be a TV show on what we do down here." I didn't realise what lifeguards, professional lifeguards, actually did. Because Australia's got a big like volunteer type movement that, to just do some days here and there, and not many people know about the professional side of it. And anyway, so I said, "Oh, well, how?" I basically looked at him and said, "Well, how would I know?" So anyway, so look with me. So we worked together for about 6 to 8 months to put together a pilot to go and pitched that, and then Bondi Rescue came along, so that kept me going in the lifeguard sort of world. And we thought that'd last. Well, originally it was only going to be an hour special, and then we got some good footage, a resuscitation from start to finish had never been captured anywhere in the world, because the cameras were there from the beginning, whereas most of the time the cameras come in after the finished or halfway through. So that was, and then I suppose looking back, I mean, that's about 20 years ago now that the show started. So there's a whole, I think we've done about 18 seasons, and so that's kept me there longer. And now I'm, 33 years. So it sort of, everything just sort of kept falling into place, I suppose, when I was looking at leaving and going to something else, and something kept me there for whatever reason.
I think it's really interesting. You have had 17 consecutive seasons of that show. Is that correct? And I
Yeah,
watched
18 now, 18,
18.
yeah.
Yeah, I watched some of it. And obviously, there's a lot of water safety education on those shows, which are, I think, is really great information. And obviously, very successful because it's had that many seasons and watched around the world. But before we get into that, and then surf life education. Rip currents are a big problem, right? In Australia and Bondi and Bondi and those beaches. Is that correct? Is that your biggest issue for drowning?
Oh, you're most people, yeah, that drown it, get caught in rips. And but it's by watching people's behavior over all those years at the beach, it's something that I realized that there's two things there. That rips, we always keep telling people they're dangerous. So at the end of the day, when you look at a rip, it's just a flow of water that will have an end point, and the end point is generally across on the sandbank, or where the waves, it'll take you to where the waves are breaking. So the theories, it doesn't pull you under, it doesn't, all these things that people talk about over the years, or you'll end up miles out to sea and things like that. I mean, pretty much all our rescues are only about 20 meters off the beach. It's not very far at all. They never end up out where the board riders are and things. So once I, which we'll talk about later with the what I'm doing with the water safety, but yeah, just to touch on that, rips are, and I found when parents tell kids growing up that the rips are dangerous, and I thought, well, what do you do when you've been told all your life that something's dangerous and suddenly you end up in that position? First thing you're going to do is panic. So I think that's got a lot to do with people, why they panic. One, they think they're going to be miles out to sea and get eaten by a shark. And the other one is that they've just been told that many times that it's dangerous.
Well, we could talk about what you've done with rip currents because I think that's very interesting. I've seen some videos that you've done where you actually take people into a rip. Is that correct? Have you done that? Or have them experience
Yes.
it?
So my theory behind that is what we, I mean, we teach kids in, you teach kids in a pool to, and the problem in Australia, they teach freestyle straight away. And I don't agree that you teach freestyle straight away. You should be teaching the survival skill afloat into a light breaststroke, into a light, so you're not using, the end of the day, the theory behind it is if you can keep your head above water and minimize the use of your energy, you can't drown if you don't swallow water. So where people drown is as soon as they can't stand up and they're getting pulled away from the shore in a rip, they want to swim as hard and fast as they can back to where they were because they think that was the safe place, whether they're standing waist depth or whether they stand on the edge, or that they actually were standing. So what I've worked out is just because you can swim or learn to swim doesn't mean you're not going to drown. So that was something that I've realized, that most people that drown can swim, pretty much majority, because when they say non-swimmer, if you're a non-swimmer, as soon as you can't stand, you go straight under like a rock where you are. But most people end up further out, or they try and fight against the current and things like that. And basically what happens is they just get exhausted, they get so tired, their arms are like lactic acid build up in the arms from trying to swim as fast as you can. And then your head starts going underwater, and then eventually you've got to breathe at some stage. They try and breathe when they're, their head's going under, they're panicking, they swallow water, and that's the start of the drowning process. And pretty much that's why the experience of getting in a rip, floating with the rip, and see where it ends up. And it's really been for people to do that, then understand what it is. And I'll give you a quick example on and which helped me when I was thinking about it in the first place before I started educating to get in the rips, because that was like a, it's a taboo subject that you don't put people in rips. It's just stay away from rips. And and we've worked with universities that it's basically impossible to teach someone what a rip looks like. If you don't get it, you don't get it. You're not going to understand it. I know people now that have been at the beach for growing up around the beach and still can't tell me which way that water's moving in the rip. They might find, oh, that's a deep area, so that must be the rip. But they can't tell me which way the water's going. Whereas I can say, if you go in this point, you'll end up at that point. So from that, I'm petrified of heights. So what I was doing is when they made me go skydive for the TV show, and I went and did that. And I thought, so I'm petrified. I thought, what I did when I was doing it, I was thinking, right, I put myself in the same position as someone that's potentially drowning. It'd be the same feeling. So when they did the safety brief on the TV, and we used to only just go out to schools with water safety and tell people and talk to people, put slides up. And now I'm starting to think that that's probably not, that doesn't, it's a little bit of education, but that's not going to solve the problem. Because once I watched the safety brief, I thought, convinced myself that, oh, this is going to be fine. I'll be fine in there. I'll be fine going up in the plane and jumping out. And it convinced me by just watching that TV safety brief. Until I actually got up there to experience it, and then I just totally froze. So by going to a school and teaching and putting slides up, and kids will sit there, go, yeah, I can't, no, rips, blah, blah, blah. But what happens is when they're actually in that position, they forget what was told in the classroom. So the experience is what helps when you do actually get in it because you've already been in and experienced it. It's like going and watching a TV or getting briefed in a classroom on how to drive a car and just hand the people keys and never driven a car and off you go and drive a car. So most things we do in life, we experience. So that's how that idea came about. Let's put people in the rips. Now, if it's people that are reasonably confident or they say that they can float. Now, floating is, it's not just the, people think floating is a starfish, just on your back, feet up. Because when you, I do a lot of work with the swim schools, they teach to do the starfish, and what happens is they tell them put your keep your feet up, your toes out of the water. And I said, why do you say keep your toes out of the water? And they did, no one really had an answer. I said, well, your toes don't need to breathe, because a lot of people struggle to keep their legs up. And I said, but your toes don't need to breathe, so why do they need to be up? And they go, oh yeah, fair point. I said, so basically, everybody's floating position is different. There's not one floating position. So you can go back like a dentist chair position if you're going backwards. You're not in a starfish. So your legs can drop. And you might do a little bit of sculling with your hands to keep yourself, you know, afloat. You could be doing the old school tread water, you know, moving your arms and legs. Or you could be forward. In a more of a like a light breaststroke, or just you moving your hands on your stomach that way. And I found that they're probably the three main positions people go to. So when they get in there, you go, just find your comfortable position. As long as your head's above water and you're not using your energy, whatever position that's comfortable for you, that's the position you do. And that's what's been working, because what's happened is we've been trying to teach people, oh, you do the starfish, or you do this, you do that. A technical side of it. Now, everyone can't do a technical side of, you know, it's the same as swimming, same as running. Everyone runs different on land.
That's a really
So that's one thing that came about. And when I looked at it, that all rips will pull across or come at that end point. Rivers are the same. If you get caught going down river, it'll pull you to the side of the bank somewhere. It might be 100 meters, might be a kilometer down river, but it will take you to the side of the bank somewhere. And the other thing, if it doesn't, you don't save yourself. The longer you can float gives you time. So it gives you time for someone to come and rescue you, whether it's a lifeguard, whether it's a surfer, whether it's a someone in a boat or someone, whatever it is, the longer you can float, you can then be rescued. And it's amazing when you're trying to swim as fast as you can, you're puffing, exhausted. Once you go into a float position, you can then your breathing comes back to normal. The panic starts going, because I always hear people say, oh, when you're caught in a rip, stay calm. Well, what if you're panicking, what, I just, oh, now I've got to be calm. You need an action to be able to become calm.
Right.
So that's the action to become calm, because you just can't, if you're in a panic, whether you, no matter what you're doing in life, whether you're driving a car, whether you, and you panic and you just go, oh, I just got to stay calm. How do you stay calm? There's an action that makes you then become calm. So it all tied in, and we just started trialing it, and I was getting in rips, and we had experienced people doing it in the first place. And then I felt, well, the only way to test it is just grab people. And you probably saw the one on the show, or whichever,
Yes.
wherever you saw it, or videos.
Yep.
I was just grabbing people randoms off the beach and said, do you want to jump in a rip with me? And they were jumping in. Some had never been to rip before. And we're just talking and drifting along, and they didn't know which way they were going and what they were doing. And then I said, just stand up. And that, mate, all of them said, oh, is that all I've got to do? Is that it? You know, we're just talking. They didn't even realize. So it definitely works. It's
Well,
something that, that's
getting
why we're
back,
trying to drive that through the world, in everywhere, and internationally in the world.
I think that's really interesting. I want to know, you're talking about young children in school and doing water safety and talking about actually experiencing a rip. Are you actually formally doing that in the school system or not?
No, it's hard. It's trying to get into the curriculum's hard. Trying to fight against surf life saving and getting it in that way. They're against a lot of stuff. So it's hard. Australia's weird. It's you're fighting against the volunteer movements a lot in Australia. Whereas I know, like Hawaii, you have volunteers, but they haven't got a lot of. I could be wrong. Just correct me if I'm wrong. But I think around the world, volunteers great at what they do, but they don't have a lot of say or pull in how like a professional service is going to run or how you're going to implement things. It's always the government with the professional services, whereas the Australia it's the government with the volunteer services, and the professional services don't really get much of a say. And that's where we go wrong in Australia. It's experienced people don't get enough of an input to what to do. So that's what made me then go out on my own, reflect and survive, and just go and do it, and
You would say that,
just prove that we can do it.
yeah, your experience of taking people into a rip, you really thought that was pretty good strategy for having people understand it because they're experiencing it, right?
Yeah, it's understanding, and the experience is what gets you. And for an example, we had a Western Sydney University. They get a lot of students come from all around the world, like India, Nepal, wherever, to come and study for a year in Australia. Now, we have a lot of those people that go to the beach because they want to experience the Australian culture, and they end up drowning, and they've got no experience. And we've got a lot of people migrating to Australia too from all around the world, so they haven't got the background of water. And even kids here now, our standard of swimming is pretty, I mean, we've been known now as a nation of non-swimmers. All we get is a small percentage of swimmers go to the Olympics, and everyone thinks we're all great swimmers. But
So what is Australia doing about that? Because we face the same problem with a younger generation of not having water safety or knowing how to swim because we don't have the resources or the funding to put it back into the schools, or there's not enough programs to have kids get swimming lessons. So.
yeah. Well, see, that's the thing. Like, when you talk about swimming lessons, that's a so people have got to pay to go to them. They've got to do all that sort of stuff, and that's why I'm trying to drive now that so say take your swimming lessons away to start with in Hawaii, and everyone in all of Hawaii learn the skill, the survival skill of the float. Right?
Right.
Now, what do you think would happen if everyone knew that as a default in Hawaii, right? So, and Australia is the same, but we're trying to teach people to swim, right? And then they can swim, but that's not going to save their life. Because even me, if you told me to swim out from Bondi and keep swimming straight out to sea, just keep going, there'll be a point in time I will be that exhausted, that tired, I'll drown. Right? So everyone's got their limit of how far they can swim before they drown. But if I was doing that and going into my survival technique and skill of floating, I've got way more chance of survival. Because if you hear stories of people falling off cruise ships, people have been floating for 30, 38 hours just in the water, and then I end up getting found. So
Tired
it
after
works.
3 hours of
Yeah.
floating. That's
It's like when I was talking about, and what was I going to say? I think it's Thailand, they teach now that everybody has to float for to 2 hours to pass their test.
where is this?
In Thailand, some a part of Thailand,
Interesting.
and yeah, and I've just been over in Singapore, doing stuff over there, and in the school, in the curriculum, they have to do 12 weeks of surf safety, which includes like your float to survive, your then you learn to swim. So I'm not against learn to swim. It's basically you should learn the floating survival technique first. Then the next step is into learn to swim. And then if you're swimming and you're getting tired, you're getting exhausted, you start panicking, revert back to your float skill, get your breath back, get your energy back, you haven't swallowed water, and then continue swimming again until you eventually may get to where you need to get to, or someone will come and rescue you. So it's just the default of when you're in that panic stage. But a majority of the population around the world don't know that. They think they can swim themselves out of danger. You're not going to swim yourself out of danger unless you're really exceptional. But then again, I've had Ian Thorpe back in the day that It took a hard, so he's breaking world records, right? In Olympics, he holds world records, winning Olympics. Took 30 minutes to convince him to put his head in the water in the ocean. So it doesn't matter how good you swim. And I think we need to, that's the problem we've got, is we're telling people you need to swim, but not giving them the education of survival.
Right. That's
So with the Western Sydney students coming down, some had never seen the beach, never touched sand, thought the ocean was fresh water, not sea, salt water. So that's the ability that these people are coming. And I said, no, we'll put them in the river, we'll put them in. And half of them might not know how to. And what we did though, we put life jackets on them for a bit of safety, because I didn't know whether they could, they probably couldn't even float, let alone swim. Yeah.
right.
So, but that gave them the flotation. Now, I went through the whole spiel on the beach on what we're going to do, how we're going to do it. I walked in with them. We did about five at a time and we floated. All of them did it. All of them ended up on the sandbank because I knew that's where we're going to end up. They walked in. I thought they'd all just do it. We had about 20 or 30 there, and we did five groups each and just kept going. And I thought, like, some were very hesitant to get in, obviously, because they'd never been in, probably in, apart from having a shower, never been in any water in their life. But we just encouraged them, coaxed them in, got them in. And I suppose the trust in me, because obviously they've seen what we do on the show and things, so they had trust that I'm not going
Right.
to let something happen to them. I thought they'd only do it once and that'd be enough. They'd be a bit scared, don't want to go in. They end up running around, jump back in where we started. They did that five times in the rip. So it becomes like a ride. It becomes like
How
a
did you do
amusement
that?
park water slide.
How did you get all those kids together to do that?
To do that. Oh, well, it was, I had a connection with Western Sydney University, said, oh, we want to do some water safety because we've got all these new students coming
Okay.
from around the world and we don't want them drowning while they're here. And I said, okay, well, we could do that, but oh, they need to be able to go in the water.
My goodness. I think that
Yeah.
sounds like
But you think in Hawaii, you watch when it's all the big wave surfers, right? When they get dumped in the surf, when they come up, what are they doing? They're floating. They're not swimming. They're not swimming out of it, right? Because they're getting there, trying to stay calm because obviously it's big waves. They've just been dumped, so they've been held under and they're lacking oxygen. So they're not coming up and then swimming with lack of oxygen. They're floating, relaxing, getting their breath back because the next wave's either going to hit them or they're floating, going with the flow of the water to get themselves in a better position. Or they're waiting for the jet ski to come in to pick them up and move them out. But the secret to it all is they're not swallowing water.
Right.
Right? As soon as, it doesn't matter how good you are, the best big wave surfers have drowned because they've ended up exhausted, tired, held down, out of oxygen, and swallow water. And that's it. As soon as you start swallowing water. So the secret to it is to minimize swallowing water and you can never, ever drown.
Well, I think what you're saying about water safety and teaching people how to float and how to be in a rip makes total sense before anybody starts to have swim lessons, because if you're a swimmer, you could drown. So,
Yes.
and we're trying to get
Because
something
you,
like that here, but it's
yeah.
tough.
So say you can swim a kilometer in the pool or a kilometer in the ocean, but you then get caught in a rip. So say a kilometer is whatever amount of strokes. Say you do 1,000 swim strokes, and you get pulled in a rip, and you try and swim because most people will try and come back to where they were. So if you're swimming into the current, and you're not making any progress, you've then used your 1,000 strokes. You're still not standing, you're still not hanging on anything. So what happens then? So you're exhausted. You start panicking more because you're not getting closer to the shore. You think you're going to drown. All these things start going through your mind. But if they had have just originally, before you've done your 1,000 strokes, just gone straight into your survival skill of float, the water will start taking you where you need to go to, You're not exhausted. Even when you get pulled across to where the waves are, if you're not exhausted, you've got better chance of holding your breath if you have to. Whereas if you've done your 1,000 strokes and then you stop, it's going to take you to where the wave, where you're meant to have gone in the first place. But now you're exhausted. Now
Right.
you've got to hold your breath with the wave coming. So most people then can't hold their breath because they're exhausted and have to open their mouth when they're underwater, swallow water, and then off. That's the start of the drowning process. So
So
it's so simple, but we just don't educate that way.
educate is right. That's what we're trying to do here. But as our mayor said, Dwayne DeSoto, who's a legendary waterman, said, we got to get the messaging right. And we don't have the messaging right. We have a visual of a rip current, but as you said, most people couldn't identify what that is. And I think that's probably true here. So what do we do?
And a rip, you always see the rip just going straight out with a mushroom type thing.
Right.
Like, there's a million ways that a rip works. It's just, that's not it. And then they say swim parallel or sideways. Well, that's all right if the water's going straight out, which it rarely does. It'll be bending across left or right or whichever way. Now, if you think the rip starts bending to the left, and as I said before, people want to go back to where they came from on the shore. So it's pulling you down, say, to the, say, I'll use the example, to the north end of a beach. It's starting to pull you that way. Now you think I'll swim parallel or sideways. It's great if you swim that way with it, but most people want to go back to where they were. So they'll swim parallel and sideways back into it.
Right.
So the theory doesn't work.
So what do we say as a message? Because it's
That doesn't work. All you do is say stop. What, and I'll example what we're doing at the Bondi now. We get the guys to on the megaphone, the PA. If someone's in a rip and they're swimming, we just if you get their attention and say that stop swimming, if they listen, they stop swimming. Then we know that the current is going to start moving them to where we want them to go,
right.
naturally, without them even knowing. And then you say the next sentence is, that's it, keep going with the flow of the water. And they go, okay, so they keep going and keep going. We're watching, keep going, keep going. Okay, now put your feet down. You can stand up because they're on the bank. They stand up, they walk in, right? Our rescues for the last 2 years have reduced by 50% of us having to go and rescue people
Because of that.
because of that message. Now, if people, obviously, there's people that ignore stopping swimming and all that, but then they're the ones we've got to go rescue.
Right.
So it's just and tell me in Hawaii, are there any every message and the same with Australia, it's all preventative messaging before you go in the water. There's
Right.
not one message what you do when you're in that situation in the
That's
water.
correct. That's absolutely
There's
correct.
not one.
Right.
So what
That
does the person do then? They've
that's
ignored, say they ignore all your preventatives.
right.
They're in this position now. What do you do now?
I think I wish we could have a preventative message that they would listen to, but we haven't gotten that. We have a really high drowning rate. It has not gone down particularly, and we have lifeguards that risk their lives to save somebody else's life, right?
But preventive messages is only going to get you a certain way because it's not that they're ignoring it. It's they could go in. So say we have the flags they swim between. The water
Yes.
moves. The water can pull them out of a safer, a better area anyway, and put them into a position which is not. So it's not the person's fault. They're trying to do the right thing by the messaging. But the ocean's the ocean.
Yes.
We're not beating the ocean. So that's the other thing. It's not that these people, even if you say, oh, well, don't swim in a rip, it's dangerous. Well, as I said, majority of people wouldn't know what a rip even was, looked like. And the problem is we put these diagrams up of the rip going straight out in a mushroom, right?
Right.
So if you go to the beach and that's in your brain, you go, oh, that's not a rip because that's not looking like that mushroom.
Exactly.
They get in and ends up pulling them away, but it is a rip.
So if we could do a video, because we have videos at our baggage claims where they talk about water safety, but nobody really watches them because they want to get their luggage and get to
Yeah.
the destination. Could we do one where we had people actually showing them how to be in a rip or something? Would that be effectual, like you?
I mean, even the message, like to survive, it's that's reducing without even having the experience. It's been proven now that it's had a 30% effect on reducing drowning. So, because everyone can float, no one can tell me that people tell me that I can't float, I can't float. We've got 4 liters of oxygen in our lungs. That's your flotation device. Now, if you're panicking and swimming and being exhausted, all that oxygen is gone. So now you've got no flotation.
So what you're saying is do one about float to live. Is that what you're
Yeah,
saying?
float to survive. Yeah,
Yeah.
float to survive.
Float to survive.
And it's just float to survive messaging. And like you said with the video, it's basically like we videoed me getting in a rip, drifting with them, you know. And Hawaii is, I mean, Hawaii, you know, obviously you get the big waves on the, you know, at certain areas, but
Right.
the people that are drowning aren't going out in those conditions,
No, they're
right?
not.
You might get a board rider, but that's an act, that's,
They're
yeah, whatever, because
calling
they're
out
pushing the limit, right?
areas sometimes that are not guarded, sometimes that are, but they get in a rip. They get in a situation and they panic, like you said. We had Mike Tipton on, and I'm sure you know who he is, Mike Tipton.
Mike, yeah, I've met Mike a few times, yeah.
Yeah, he was on talking about that, and that made a big impact because we as Kauai teamed up with the UK for their Find Your Float. So we had the guards float and be part of that campaign. And I outrigger paddle and I asked people to do it. And I was surprised, Bruce, that a lot of people didn't know how to float.
But
So,
then you ask them, can you swim?
and they
And
can.
they'll say, yes.
Yes.
If you can swim, you can float. So what they're probably trying to do is, I don't know what they're trying, the float is it, they're probably trying to do the starfish float.
Right.
Because a lot of people can't do that.
Right.
Because one, people don't like their ears being underwater. Because and it takes so two things that with the starfish float, it's great for a 1 year old or a 2 year old because they're obviously haven't got the strength or the ability to you know keep themselves up. So you go, yeah, that's and babies like that can seem to float on their back and in a starfish pretty easy. So the adult, most adults, if you take away, you close your eyes and try and do something, a sense of panic comes into you because you can't see.
Right.
Then, if you take your hearing away, a sense of panic comes in. So, why are we teaching in the water? Put your head back and put your ears, make sure your ears are underwater. You can't hear. Doesn't that give someone a sense of panic?
It's very
So, to
interesting.
me, yes, you go back, but you keep your head, your ears above the water. You don't have to have your ears under. You can't hear. You take your hearing away and do you panic?
Yes.
That's right. But we're teaching, put your ears in the water.
So,
Can't hear.
why do we have these messages that are all different everywhere? I'm getting confused, Bruce.
That's what I mean. So this is why the float is one simple message and it's going to save a lot of people's lives. It's not confusing.
No, I think it's great. And I want to talk about you're the founder of the Surf Education International. And so you said something about Singapore, but tell me about this organization that you've started and are part of, which I think
So,
is fantastic.
yeah, I mean, it came about because of obviously, as I said before, Surf Life Saving, get all the funding, the volunteers get all the funding. And so it's another non-for-profit arm, you know, it's a non-for-profit organization. So we can do a lot of things and get people on board, like philanthropy people, and to get a bit of funding. And
Yes.
obviously, we try and get funding through governments, but it's very hard in Australia because it's tied up by the volunteers. They get all that funding from the governments. And
Wow.
so that's how it sort of came about to start with. And then it just kept progressing. It's really taken off the last 2, 3 years. We got held up, obviously, everyone, COVID sort of slowed everything down, and we had to then rebuild again and go again. But now we've had a good 3 years. The message is really getting out there, and I've been taking it everywhere. And as I said with Singapore, they've already got all that in the curriculum of year six students at school. Now they have a 12-week program in term four, and they all have to pass whatever the floating and a certain amount of swimming and everything has to be passed. Now they do it an hour a week, like a sports part of it, an hour like a you know, when you're going to school, you get different
Physical
periods, you go
education.
do different maths and English, and then you do, well, part of that is the water safety.
Right.
So every week and or every couple of days they have to go and they take them to the pool and they learn all these techniques. Now the drowning's low, I think there's nearly to nothing to one at the most. Now they're only a small, obviously a small, Singapore's only small, but if you fail, you fail your schooling.
Really?
So it comes in now in Singapore, equivalent to your maths, your English, your science, all your other subjects you've got to pass. And obviously this is an Asian country, and a lot of Asians drown around the world.
Right.
Now I said, well, how do you go with that? They said, you know, not one fails because they know their parents are gonna, you've got to pass school, you've got to get through school. So it doesn't matter what it takes, they get through. And like I said, though, it's a lot, I reckon, to me, for someone who says, oh, it's going to be too hard. Australia, they say, oh, I know, they're from countries, it's going to be too hard. And I said, well, hang on. I think learning to float in water is a lot easier than trying to pass maths, English, science, and everything else you've got to do. And they go, oh, what do you mean? I said, well, I'm pretty sure learning to float is a lot easier than learning maths. So it's just something that we, I don't know why. So what I'm trying to do around the world is just change the mentality of the
Right.
messaging.
Yes.
I'm not reinventing the wheel here. I mean, people have been teaching floating in the 1800s. If you go back to your Navy and your Army, and they still do it to today, their first thing they learn is float in case the aircraft goes down, in case the ship gets bombed and you end up in the water. They're teaching the float, and float for long, long, like many, many hours.
Right.
So it's been there forever. It's just that we've just somehow not implemented it into our water safety messaging.
So
I think if you listen to what I've said, I mean, do you think it's quite simple? It's something easy to teach. It's something that will definitely, if you can float and keep your mouth above water, it's impossible to drown. If you don't swallow water, it's impossible to drown.
right.
And people just sort of look and go, oh, yeah, you're right. Like, makes sense.
But do you have a
So I
mom?
just think we've got to get away from that, learn to swim. I'm not against learn to swim. Teach the survival skill first. Once you know how to do that, then learn to swim.
I totally agree with that. And we're trying to push that here. Dwayne DeSoto is somebody you should be involved with or get to know because he runs an organization called Nakama Kai. He's been working on getting water safety and the culture back into Hawaii for almost, I don't know, 18 years. He's been working on this for a very long time. And he told me the key word is persistence. And he's finally got a pilot program of water safety in the ocean because he believes taking kids into a pool isn't doing anything. We need the ocean and we have to start doing it. So it's a small step, but it's something that is just happening right now. And what you're
And that's, and the other thing,
fantastic.
when you're taking kids, if you stick a whole lot of kids in a classroom and trying to teach them something, they get bored within seconds.
Right.
You take them and put them in the water. This
That's
is
right.
exciting. This is fun. This is, oh, I want to go do that. And then you get a group doing it. Suddenly they're telling other mates, oh, I want to do that. It's like when people want to go surfing, the couple go surfing, other mates go, oh, I want to go do that. Next thing you know, everyone's surfing. Like or playing football, so whatever it is, because it's fun. Now, if you could make it fun, but you're giving a very important education message within the fun, it's a win.
Right. I think you
But
have.
we don't seem to do that. We seem to try and bore kids, and they just go switch off, and Probably don't even listen to half the stuff people talk about,
So Surf Education International. So you're going to different countries, is that correct? You're doing
Yeah,
that.
so we're doing obviously Australia, then we're doing different countries, and that's what I was going to say, that it'd be great to come and when you're saying about videos, it'd
Yes.
be great to come and do the show. So my role is one, the message with Surf Education National. So I, because of my profile and the show's been all around the world, it
Yes.
helps that way to get like PR and promotion for it.
Right.
So I promote the message, but then I teach. So say I forget the guy's name you just said, I would then come and teach,
Dwayne
show him,
Pisotto.
show other people he's
Yes.
got as instructors,
Yes.
right?
Yep.
This is how it does. We jump in, you do this and this, and we float with the rip, we do it, and then it's up to them to then get people to come and they teach them. It's not my role to be teaching all these people. I just teach a few people, then they can teach people. It's simple though. If you're a waterman or obviously a surfer lifeguard background,
Right.
we can all know how to float and rip and float and where it'll end up, and then you can take people in there. Like it's not rocket science. It's something we can all do. And it's just a matter of showing that initial how it's sort of done. And as soon as I'd show them and talk to them, they just go, oh yeah, get it, get it. I get it.
I think that would be a good collaboration. You
Yeah.
and Wayne DeSoto.
Yeah.
He's somebody that I met 2 years ago, and one of the reasons I started the show because on the beach at his program, which is for kids, and then for teachers, because teachers were trying to do little lessons in the classroom. And just as you said, that's not the same as experience. So they get teacher education credit for going to his program that comes. It's only for one day. But I was really impressed with it because he said, we're all in this together. We have all these silos. We have surfers, fishermen, outrigger paddlers, swimmers. We're in our little silo of water safety, and we're not collaborating to work together to keep everybody safe and to kind of get a different take on, looking at the ocean and what the ocean is. As you've said, it changes. You can talk about a static thing like a rip current, but the ocean's constantly changing. And
That's right. And you've got tides changing. You've got high, low tides. You've got, and Hawaii's big on, 1 minute could be 4 foot, within half an hour could be 10 foot. I mean, Australia doesn't really get that. It's like if it's going to be big, it gets big and it's big, right? It doesn't really adjust up and down in an hour or 2 hours. But I know Hawaii can be, you could be sitting out there surfing in 4 or 5 foot. Next thing you know, the sets get a bit bigger, a bit bigger, a bit bigger. Half an hour later, it could be 15 foot.
Right. We don't have the
So
continental shelf.
that changes
Yes.
that's for surfing, but that changes the water in close where people are standing waist depth. So they're standing waist depth, the 1 minute's 5 foot out the back. So that's a certain amount of water then coming in. So the water comes in and it's got to move back out again.
Right.
Right? So the bigger the wave, the more volume of water that's coming in. So the more water that comes in, the more water's got to move back out.
Right. Faster.
So you're standing waist depth on the, you've gone for a swim, and oh, that was pretty good. That was all right. It was only, goes sunbake on the sand again. Oh, I'm going to go for another swim, and this might be an hour later. Conditions are, you go back in the same spot, but hang on, now it pulls you away.
Right.
And you don't know why, but that's because it's picked up in that period of time.
I have to say, Bruce, I really appreciate you coming on because what you're saying is so valuable to our listeners. And I believe what Dwayne said, that we have to collaborate. We just can't be in our own little silo trying to figure things out. So
Yeah,
we,
that's
I.
right. And I'm a big believer, like he was saying, is we don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Right.
Right, it's all there. We're just going to fine tune it.
That's exactly right. And make it a priority. I mean, as you said, in Australia, it's tough trying to get funding for different things. Here, it just hasn't been a priority for Hawaii lately. And Hawaii wants to lead the United States in water safety. We should be. We're surrounded by water. There's no reason why we shouldn't be setting the example for the rest of the country, maybe even other countries, but with people like you, we can get stronger at what we're doing. So,
And does he have trouble getting funding as well and things like that? And
but you got to think outside, the box, as Duane said. And he did get some funding, and Department of Education has finally said, yeah, let's try this, see how it goes. So we take
So
that.
how I do it, obviously there's for my time and stuff to do things like this, but it would be you come in and you have a big media campaign as well as you come in, and then they obviously come down and when we're doing the demonstrations, and then you get down the whether it's some of the politicians, some of the whoever it is that is relevant to be there to watch, because potentially at the end of that they could put that into the school curriculum, they could give convince to say, okay, we need this to be funded because it's going to reduce drowning. So you get whoever needs to be there for the demonstrations, and then you run a big media thing through the whole of Hawaii to get that message out to say this is what's happening. Just get that your general public starting to go, oh, hang on, yeah, that makes sense.
Correct, because
And
we're
then once you
stuck.
get the public on side, right,
Yeah.
the politicians have to act because they're voting for the politicians.
Right.
So if they start making rumblings that this is what we want for water safety, that they have to start doing something.
Well, this is a start, and we should talk about this some more. And is there anything you hope? Like, I have one last question. What gives you hope that drowning is preventable, and how can our communities like in Hawaii contribute to that global effort? And I think you just said that if we came in with a campaign to show people how to float to survive, people would say, gee, I get that now. I'm not going to be fearful of the ocean. I'm going to figure this out.
Yeah, I mean, my big thing, yes, is a message for what you do when you're in that critical situation. And the main thing is educating and getting the experiences. I think that's the way that we're going to reduce drowning. Look, you're probably not going to get a zero drowning anywhere because you're going to stupidity, or you're going to get
Ego.
it's outside of what you can actually tell, like teach people.
Right.
But geez, you could really minimize it. I mean, you can't help the 10% of idiots or 5% of whatever. You're not going to change that. But geez, you could really reduce the legitimate people that, and over all the years, and I don't know whether you have or lifeguards would have, experienced this. A family member or someone drowns, then seeing and dealing with that family and those members, it's horrific,
Right.
right? But the loss of someone. Now, when you sit back and look at it, you go, well, that's technically preventable. Like I hear people drowning, and most of the people drown here in Australia. It's in flat water, like rivers, dams, backyard pools, and then the ocean also. But it's only ever in 2 to 3 foot surf, very small surf.
Right.
When it's big, people just don't get out. They can't get out unless you've got a bit more experience. So it kills me that these people are drowning and it's so preventable. All they had to do was float and they'd be alive today. And that's the part that really, and Australia, I don't know about Hawaii, but Australia, we've been having a lot of people that get caught after hours or at remote locations where there's no lifeguards.
Yes.
The person going out to rescue the person is the one that drowns, the bystander rescue.
Right.
So theory there is they swim out as fast. This might be your child, it might be someone else. You swim out as fast as you can so you get there exhausted. And the first thing they want to do is start dragging them back to the shore where they came from, like I was saying before, and going just fighting the water
Right.
rather than just stopping, going with it. And what happens is then they finally let go of the child or the person they're trying to rescue. So they didn't end up floating onto the sandbank and surviving or lasting and getting rescued by somebody. The person that went to rescue them, they drown because they're just totally exhausted. So it's just so. And there's an example quickly that happened to someone. So they had a bodyboard. They went out with the bodyboard to rescue a couple of kids. They tried to then pull them back into against the current. They lost the bodyboard. Kids drifted onto the sandbank, stood up. The person, I think it was the father, ended up drowning and dying. A week later, in the exact same location, a guy went on a bodyboard, grabbed the child, or I think it was another adult, and all they did was hung onto the bodyboard, didn't do anything, went with the water, and then in the next 2 to 3 minutes, the lifeguard jet ski came around and picked them up. They survived because all they did is nothing, just float.
Story. Very, we
Right.
have.
So the guy that tried to pull them back and rescue them, he ends up drowning. So I've just watched it and seen it, and it works. It definitely works all the time. Like it's something that it's just a matter of getting it out there around the world, you know.
Well, I think we've taken the first step in talking to you today, Bruce. So
Yep.
I want to
No, thanks
thank
for having me. It's been great.
I thank you so much, and we're going to stay in touch, and I'll get you in touch with Dwayne, who's got a program going, and let's just see how much we can do with this float to survive, because I think it's the right messaging for sure.
Yeah, I think it'd be great to get into Hawaii and
Yeah.
see the result. I mean, do you know how many drownings you have a year at the moment, or?
We in Hawaii have had, just because it's maybe 187 we've had.
Right.
We have a lot where we
Yeah.
set in 2008, I think it is 0.9 per 100,000 per drowning, and we're triple that now. And we're trying. I mean, on Oahu, they have more extended hours for lifeguards, but we're still in the newest data that came out. We found that, wow, it's just not tourists that are drowning, it's our local kids, right? And they don't know how, they don't know anything about the water, right?
That's what it is. And I mean, Australia, we've got we play about 350 drownings a year.
That's a
So
country.
it's going up. And we're the same. I mean, it's a pretty big country, but we're surrounded by water. And
Yes.
everyone lives on the coast. No one lives inland because it's too hot.
Well, you can look at us in geography and location and see how small we are. Then you can see Kauai, and we have a high drowning rate. And we have it on hiking areas from rivers that come out into the ocean. But,
That's right. It's a high number for the amount of people you got there.
yes, that's correct. That's why we're doing the show. And we're excited that you came on. So we'll be back in touch.
It's been great. Yeah, no, I'd love to help. Love to see if we can collaborate somehow, and it'd be great to sit down, have another chat, later on, and say, yeah, look, this year's drownings have gone down.
Yes, I think that's, thank you for that message, Bruce. We're going to stay in touch. I appreciate it.